Well, we can hope for the best. There it is.
The tape is on now, I believe. And then the meter is going, so I guess it's recording.
Could back it up just a little bit and check and see.
All right, let's do that. We figured how to run this thing. Where were we?
All right. We were going into Watermelon Park at Berryville, and there was a line of cars in front of us, and it was real dry and dusty. And we'd done change clothes over to the motel to go into the... And we didn't have any air conditioning. This was like in July or August, and it must have been 95 degrees outside. Yeah. Well, we got on in there, and the dust died down, and Carter or Ralph one reached for the handle. I said, no, Let's leave these glass up and drive on in there, and they'll think we got air conditioning. And that was a big thing in the car back then, you know. Yeah. And we rolled in there, and we got out, and we was plumb wet with sweat. There's sweat beads on our foreheads, big as garden peas, you know. It took us half the day to cool off. But that's the story on that.
One other story I remember you telling us, we were in Germany or Switzerland or something. On that tour, tell us about Ralph being short and he's hoping someday to see somebody shorter than him. That he could...
Oh, Lord, yeah. Can I say it on there?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure.
What was... We went to Cincinnati to record. And Ralph is only five couple, you know. He is a short little fella, and got a complex too. About it, really. Well, now it's Melvin called him little man and everything, you know, so much till he kind of got used to it. But anyhow, we were walking down the street, and there's a little fella there, about 4 feet tall. But he wasn't, you know. I mean, he was normal. You saw a small fellow with a little short, but he was, and he had on a little overcoat, you know. And he could have been a millionaire. He was dressed out of this world.
Uh-huh.
And we got right up to him, and Ralph looked at him and said, "Well, hello there, you little short son of a bitch." That fellow looked like he could. If he'd had a machine gun, he'd turned it right on. Ralph, he sniggered. We just kept going, you know.
Ralph may have been there when you told that story, because I remember him saying, you know, afterwards he said, "Yeah, that was one guy I knew I could take."
Yeah, he said, I could whoop his, you know, I could take him.
And that's what it made it so funny about it. Remember that row we had in that restaurant?
Yeah.
About the overcoats?
Yeah.
And I expected that Carter, you know, if that would have been a tremendous row if they'd tried to keep his overcoat, but he hadn't worn one.
Yeah.
But the rest of us, you know, they had...
they wanted to keep our coats, didn't they?
they wanted a little tip, you know.
That's what it was. Yeah.
It's just that system there, and they didn't understand it. We didn't understand all of that.
I'd forgot that, Tracy. Yeah. It's a good thing he didn't have one on.
Yeah. I've wondered about that.
Because he would have tore up Jack there, yeah. If they tried to keep his coat, he just went back and got it.
Yeah,
he'd have done something. But that was a good trip, though. I enjoyed it, and we got out of it alive some way.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Had to send poor old Chick back after about 2 weeks. Yeah. You know, he just couldn't take it.
He was getting obnoxious.
Awful. Yeah. My goodness.
That's terrible. That man was so talented.
Yeah, well, he died right after, well, not too long after.
Not too long afterwards, right. Yeah. Just so talented.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Well, we had him. Carlton Haney, he was the big cheese in booking the opera acts, you know.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he had all the big Coliseums and the Moss in Richmond and all that, the big auditoriums and everything. He had about five or six, and he'd work them just, you know, he'd bring in... It wasn't anything for him to bring in a half a dozen of the biggest acts in country music. I mean, Merle Haggard from the West Coast and Buck Owens and George Jones and Marty Robbins and Farron Young. I've been on a program with all of them at one time.
Uh-huh.
Well, and we got 15 minutes, you know.
Yeah.
And Carlton, he done the booking on that stuff, you know, and he knew us, and he'd book us on them, you know. And boy, I'm telling you, I saw Carter a few times. If the sound, they'd set it up for the electric instruments. Didn't care nothing about the acoustics. You know, well, they couldn't hear us the first three rows, you know.
Yeah.
And boy, you talk about calling it to a halt. I know one time we was playing the Gator Bowl in Jacksonville.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how many thousand people, and they had a revolving stage went around and around. We sit up out in the middle, and the motor give out in it. And there's a fella laying down on his back under there, upside down, riding the bicycle, or rotating that stage.
My goodness!
And Carter, he got out there, and he'd had him a little shooter or two, you know, and he said, "Here's a so many $1 million building, and so many $1,000s worth of talent." And so and so stage that won't work, and $150 PA set.
Yeah, I guess you had to really pay attention to what he was saying. He could rip that stuff off pretty quick.
He could lay it down there. He could lay you bare. Yeah, he was funny when he's on your side. It was funny.
Yeah.
But he and I always got along good. We had when you tried, like Ralph said. After Carter died, he and I was talking one day and reminiscing, and he said, "You know, anybody that traveled as much as we did,
yeah,
I mean, go to bed in the same room with them and get up and travel all day and all night." He said, "You're gonna have some words.
Yeah,
it's gonna come, irregardless of how much you try to shun it.
Yeah." Yeah.
They're still going to get a little friction once in a while. One's going to be tired, and the other's going to be feel pretty good and start picking on him a little bit, you know, and he's going to get him off his back one way or another, you know. But we never did come to any blows. We always had just good fellowship, I guess, better than most, really.
I remember you saying one time is something about we're just like kids. If we see something when we're driving by and have an argument about it, they said, stop, turn around, and go back.
We used to play these horses. You know, you take one this side of the road, and I'd take that side, and we'd count heads, you know, and 10 was a game.
Uh-huh.
Well, 5 counted, a white horse counted 5.
Uh-huh.
And so we was going down the road one day, and there's an old open barn there, and I saw a mule's, I saw his ears, and I saw his legs. I said, right there's a mule in that barn. We don't believe that. And we didn't. We had a whole lot, you know, maybe a Pepsi or something. And I said, "Well, I'll just bet you $1 there's a mule in that stable." We went on down the road. We'd argued a couple hundred yards, you know, down the road. Well, Ralph, I believe, was driving. I said, "Turn it around." He turned that thing around, went back up, and that old mule stuck his head out the window. Carter said, "Well, I mean, son, hand me $1. Said, "You got eyes like a hawk." I got his $1 there.
So, what other games did they like a pastime, in other words, to make the time go by?
That was about it. Sometimes we'd play just a little nickel poker, you know. And now, Curly Secker was with us for a few months one time, and he loved to play that poker at night.
Well,
we used his hat for the pot. He had one of them roll-brim beaver Stetsons, you know, that like they wore with flat scrubs back then. He'd left them and come with us. And he'd sit in the back in the middle, and he'd put the hat down between his. Well, when you wanted to ante up, you'd throw your quarter or nickel or whatever in the pot, in the hat, you know. And then you'd throw if you opened in bed or whatever, you'd throw it in there. And we played a little poker, but it nothing serious because there couldn't none of us afford it, really, you know, and get grocery money home. We just, something to pass the time, you know. But that horse game, I guess, was about the biggest thing, you know. Because we all loved horses, you know. And one time I'd moved back to Carolina, and we wasn't doing any radio down in Florida at that time. And they still lived in Florida, and they'd come by the house. It was just right on their way, and because all their dates was north, you know, at that time. And they'd come by the house and pick me up. And we'd go on out and play our dates. And one night we was going to Cincinnati to record. We went up there and played the Ken Mill over in Cincinnati there. And we could play there anytime we was in town, you know. We went over there and played that thing, and we was just beat to death. And we went to the hotel, the New Denison there in Cincinnati, and Ralph and me got on a horse trade. Well, my horse was in North Carolina and his in Florida, and the trailer was in Virginia. And we came within $10 of trading it at 4 o'clock in the morning. Now, we were sleeping together. We laid there and argued for an hour over that $10. It was $10 apart. And directly he jumped up and grabbed his britches and got his pocketbook out and threw the $25, I think was the deal, throwed it on the bed and said, now maybe I can get some sleep. Well, we got our recording done. We went back to Virginia there, and he had his truck up there, pickup. We was playing the Swanee River Jamboree at Live Oak on Saturday night. That's right. So we left up there, and we came back by his house, and we hooked to the truck to the horse trailer and put that horse on.
Yeah.
And no, I've got it wrong. We hooked to the trailer, went by the house and dropped the trailer. My horse is at home and his is in Florida. And so Saturday morning about 5 o'clock, I went out. I'd hooked to the trailer on Friday evening. So Saturday morning about 5 o'clock, I went and loaded the horse on the trailer, and Mama got ready. We drove down there and played. We unloaded the horse, and we played. You couldn't get through the. It's awful strict about getting animals, livestock into Florida.
Oh yeah.
But I knew a road over around Stark and through that back road that could dodge the inspection.
Yeah.
So I got the horse there, and we unloaded it. We played the Swanee River Jamboree that night. And Sunday morning, we got up. We stayed with Ralph and Peggy. And we got up, ate a good breakfast, went out there and loaded that horse. Me and Mama come on back to the house, you know.
Uh-huh.
And then they came up on, like, the following whenever. And he drove the truck, and he just hooked to the trailer and pulled it back up on the Smith Ridge up there.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But we traded all the time.
Yeah. That's a good story now.
Yeah.
Maybe I can get some sleep.
Yeah, he grabbed his pocketbook, threw a 20 and a 5 on the bed, said, now take this, and he let out a little in there, you know. Maybe I can get some sleep now.
Oh, boy. Well, so when you got finished with those 8 months at was it W-Y-O-P? Elk Hill?
W-O-A-Y.
W-O-A-Y,
yeah.
It was like... Were the crowds starting to fall off, or just you?
Well, after you played around, see the territory, we could about play out the best of it, and then do a repeat in about 6 or 7 months, and we had kind of got the cream and just sort of left the skim. Now the Lilly brothers, they would come over once in a while and be a guest on our program, you know. Everett was with Flat and Scruggs in Raleigh at that time. And B was, he was back here, I forget the little town he was from, a little coal mining town here, but he was at home, and B would come home once in a while, and they would come over to the station, you know, and we'd invite them to do a song or two, you know, and I believe Don Stover might have come by a few times.
Played
a number or so with us, but we played Hillbilly Ranch, I believe, in Boston.
Boston. Hillbilly Ranch.
Well, now we'd go up there and play that. Now, I never did play it with, I did play it with Stanley's, but now we'd play it with Don Reno. I played it with Don Reno and Bill Harrell. And we'd go up there and play that thing. I remember one night Boog Powell came out. Baltimore was playing Boston the next day. And we were working that night. Boog and Bill Harrell went to, is it St. Mary's College in Maryland there? I can't think of that up. But anyhow, they went to school together. So Boog found out it was over there, and he came over to see Bill, and we didn't start till like midnight and played all night, rest of the night. You know?
Good heavens.
And like 5 o'clock in the morning, it's cutie. And so Boog stayed there with us all night and had to be on the practice field at 9 o'clock. That morning, you know.
Yeah.
He stayed with us all night there listening to that. That's picky, you know.
Oh, boy. Well, I probably run out of questions, and I'm sure everybody will appreciate you spending so much time.
Well, it's just been a pleasure, Tracy. It really has. And I've enjoyed the fellowship here and the reception and the way people received it. You know, when you go to, I've done a lot of these workshops and things, but they're all different, you know.
Yeah.
And it's been like 25 years since I've been in the college circuit, you know. And you don't know what to expect.
Yeah.
You know, time changes things,
yeah.
But it just brought back a lot of good old feelings, good old times. So I appreciate it. Appreciate the invitation. I hope that I've done something that'll kind of keep in people's memory for a little while.
Yeah, it's good here. I think they got a real good program. Really glad to hear that you were coming.
Well, first thing I did when they sent me the book, I got to looking and I saw your name. I said, well, I won't be among, they won't all be strangers. I said, there's one that I know.
All right.
So I've enjoyed the fellowship and being with you and getting to see you again.
All right. Yeah. We'll shut her off now.
Okay.
We may have missed something, but I think we caught quite a bit on it.